In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
A gathering of art, music, culture, and fashion takes the stage at the Levitt Shell. From SDPB, today is Friday, August 22nd. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we preview the All My Relatives Festival this weekend. First, we'll hear from hip-hop producer and singer Gabriel Nightshield. We'll talk about his career in music and what's happening on the hip-hop scene in the state. Then, Kyrie Dunkley joins us. We'll take a look at trends in Native fashion and what it takes to put a show on the runway and a collection in the marketplace. Then, headliner Mato Wayuhi returns to SDPB. He's got new music in the world, a new show coming on FX Hulu, and a new band ready to take the stage this weekend. That conversation is coming later in the hour. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The third annual All My Relatives, or Matakue Oyasan Festival, is happening tomorrow at Levitt at the Falls. The Sioux Falls event showcases Native artists, performances, and culture. We're going to spend the hour giving you just a taste of what that festival has to offer. First up, hip-hop artist Gabriel Nightshield, a three-time Native American Music Award winner. Let's begin with Nightshield taking us back to the beginnings of his 26-year musical journey. You have been making music for other people to have a good time since what, high school?
Since I started, this is actually my 25th year, technically, of doing it, like, professionally. So
yeah.
Doing it for quite a while.
How did you get your start?
Honestly, I started out, like, DJing and stuff like that. And then when I was in high school, I was DJing. And then when it got time to figure out what I wanted to do after high school, I knew I wanted to do something in the music area or whatever. And so I decided to go to school to become like a audio engineer or like a, you know, something to do with that.
Yeah.
And I started making music, honestly, just out of like the necessity of like, I had no one else to record. So it was like me and some friends were like, just like, cause I went to school at the Art Institute of Seattle.
Right.
So like part of our assignments were to be like, okay, we get to record, you know, a song or something like that. And I was new in Seattle. I didn't know anybody. So me and a couple friends were just like, well, we don't want to fail the class. So we just started having to like make stuff on our own. And then that's sort of where it just grew out of that.
Yeah. So you're from Rosebud?
From Rosebud. Yeah.
All right. So you're in Seattle. What about what year would that be?
This is going to make me old, but I went out there in 97.
Yeah. Okay. So the Seattle music scene in 97 is hard to break into, probably.
Yeah.
To make those connections if you're a kid from Rosebud.
Yes, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So then you say, well, we're just going to do it ourselves.
Yes. Yeah. We're like, well, we don't want to fail this class. So like, you know, and so we would just find like little beats and like, I didn't even know how to write music or anything like that at the time. It was just, you know, learning on the fly. And I haven't listened to those old tapes in so long, and I hope I never hear them again, but like it was all a learning process. It was pretty rough.
Yeah, but that's how you got at what point did you say like, yeah, this is fun and it has value and I want to do more of it? Like, when did it go from I don't want to hear this, because it's hard for everybody to listen to themselves start out.
Yeah,
you're gonna be bad.
Yeah,
you're beginning.
Yeah.
When did you become more than a beginner?
I mean, even well into my, like, when I was putting music out, I don't feel like I felt like real comfortable with it until like maybe like 7-8 years into it. And then I was just sort of still learning and trying to figure things out. And I had moved back here to South Dakota in like 2000. I moved to Sioux Falls in 2000. And at that point, I remember waking up one morning and just having like an epiphany, like, I'm going to start a record label. And like, I just decided to, like, I knew a lot of like talented people and stuff like that. And I wanted to be like the guy that like put up my friends out that were super talented. And I would put out like a song here and there on my own. And that's sort of where like the bug, you know, started, you know, catching on with me or whatever. And then after a while, I started just making my own music, and then it just it grew out from like doing the record label thing to just being like a full blown, like, I'm just going to do this on my own and go for it. So,
yeah. How important is it to always have your friends around you, collaborating with new people, people coming in and out of the scene, figuring out who's making the new thing? That seems to me from the outside, that seems essential to the work.
Oh,
that
yeah.
You do. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because like I run out of ideas, or I, you know, sometimes I'll run low on like the passion to do it or whatever. And then someone else comes in and then they're like super passionate about something and their spark ignites me again. And then, it's all a creative, like just getting energy from everybody. Definitely helps the process.
Yeah. So on stage, same thing happening, energy from the crowd matters.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The crowd dictates the show a lot of times.
Yeah. So you put out your, what, 9th album now?
Yeah, I put out an album in April called Handsome Devil. Yeah, that was my my 9th solo album, yeah.
Yeah. What helped you put those songs together and help them hang together? What was the process of making that record?
It was just making, it's weird now because I make music almost, because I perform so much, like, I make stuff to, like, what would be fun in the show? Like, what would be fun to, like, perform? Or whatever. And I almost approach music that way now more than like just writing songs like, this is how I'm feeling today or whatever. I almost approach music as like, this would be fun to perform, or this would be fun to, you know, do at a show, or, you know, what would the crowd be like? And I still have those other moments where like I write personal stuff, but I try to just do more fun stuff and, you know, make it light and have a good time.
So other people are like bringing their favorite dip. Or stopping at the store to pick up, you know, whatever their beverage of choice is to bring to the party. You're bringing the next music.
Yeah. That's the goal.
And you're thinking about that accordingly. So what's the scene like? What's the hip hop scene, especially like in South Dakota right now?
Right now, honestly, it doesn't seem like there is much of a scene. There's maybe like a handful of people out there doing it. About 10 years ago, the scene was really good here in town. Like there was a lot of venues that played hip hop, you know, had hip hop shows, and like there was, you know, magazines and newspapers and stuff were like eager to cover it and stuff like that. So the scene really grew in that time frame. And I feel like in the past like 5 or 6 years, we've slowly like lost all those things that helped build the scene. And it just sort of just stagnated the whole area, I feel like, as far as hip hop goes.
Is that attached to the pandemic and 2020 at all? 5 years ago that would have been going on, or
maybe.
is it you know, parallel to that but not connected?
I don't know, like I feel like even like because we remember, I don't know, like the Argus Leader used to do the link,
right?
And then we used to have like Sioux Falls Radio, and then there was just things out there that made it easier for hip-hop to survive. Like Biggs used to be a big venue for hip hop, and now they almost never do hip hop shows. So it's hard for somebody to get out there and really like showcase their talent if you haven't already been out there. It's hard for like a brand new person to sort of just jump in the scene, because there really isn't those avenues any longer for new artists to get out there and do like a showcase or something like that, just to, you know, get some experience on stage. I feel like that's missing right now.
For all music, but I would think especially for hip hop, the audience, you know, just releasing something digitally would not have the full experience that you need. You need the crowd.
Exactly. Yeah. For sure.
All right. Well, there's going to be a party this weekend on the stage at the Levitt. Tell us about the All My Relatives Festival and the role that you're playing in it, because this is a big show. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm super excited. This is my 3rd year doing it. Every year it's just been so fun. I also DJ like the fashion shows and do stuff like that during the day. This year I'm opening for Mateau on at 7. I have a bunch of like good friends of mine that are going to be performing with me and stuff. I have Trey Lane and Brandis Knudsen, Chewy Rodriguez, Gabriel Michael. I have like some traditional dancers going to be on stage with me. It's just going to be a big party. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Throughout that's the stuff happening on throughout the weekend. Tell me a little bit about the role of fashion for this weekend and the connection you have between music and fashion, because it's also important to you again and again.
Yeah. I feel like fashion is like an underappreciated or I don't know if underappreciated is the right word, but like it's something that people don't really think about. But I know at least I think about it a lot, like when I perform, like what am I going to wear? What's the outfit, you know, that I'm going to wear on this particular show? Or, you know, I'm always conscious of how I look or whatever, how I want to present myself. And the fashion shows are great. We're showcasing a lot of indigenous, you know, designers and stuff this year. And that's always fun just to see just the different models and the different designs and everything. I'm really like last year was really fun. And I'm anticipating that this year is going to be at least as much fun, if not more.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about some of the other performers. You mentioned Chewy. He's been on the show before here and has played for us. I know in Handsome Devil, you've got a piece with Denim. Are there other artists who you think people should be watching and paying attention to?
I'm really excited for Denim right now. Denim's really like blowing up. Denim's doing great. Dakota Faye is an artist out here that's he's going to be at the All My Relatives. That's, I mean, he's blowing up right now too. I think he's really great. People should check him out. Obviously, Crime Spree and Maniac the Supernatural. Those are like two of my guys or whatever, and they're great. Everybody should listen to them and check them out. And there's a lot going on if you get out there and look for it.
Yeah. What's your message to younger kids who are getting a start? You know, it seems like if there's not venues, there's certainly, you know, music video locations. You filmed at the Arc of Dreams, and there's just all kinds of cool visuals in this area to tie into your creative work. But it's got to be really hard without, you know, being able to see people on the stage doing the thing that you want to grow up and do. So what's your advice to people who are trying to find their way in the music business right now, but they're from here?
Yeah, I would say just get out there and, I mean, get out there and just go to shows, shake hands, introduce yourself to people. I mean, positive energy goes a long way. Like, even if I might not know you or whatever, you come up, shake my hand or, you know, say what's up or whatever. A lot of times people feel like, especially in hip hop, they feel like the need to like to diss you or to like, you know, talk about you in a negative way or whatever. And feel like that's going to be their way on, but it's the exact opposite. Like, you know, that just makes me want to not work with you or like, you know, not put you in situations where you could be out there. But if, you know, even if you're, say your talent is not all the way there, but just being a nice person and like, oh, I like that dude, I'm going to put him on this show or, you know, I'm going to do that. And that's just all it takes to help artists grow. I mean, I was terrible when I first started and just getting out there and just, you know, shaking hands and meeting people and stuff like that slowly, you know, got me a foot in the door, and that's, you know, how I got here.
Yeah. And then you open the door for other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to do what I can. Yeah.
I love that. Anything else you want to talk about before we let you go? It's going to be quite a show.
Yeah. Just come on out. It's going to be a great time. Actually, after the show, we have an after party at the Den, for Crime Spree's birthday bash. And it's a whole night of just good music and good times.
That's Gabriel Nightshield, the award-winning hip-hop artist, will perform at Levitt at the Falls this Saturday. It's part of the All My Relations Festival. The Levitt stage will also become a runway on Saturday afternoon. We have the details coming up after the break. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Throughout Saturday afternoon, the All My Relatives Fashion Show and Music Showcase will take over the Levitt stage. The showcase invites established and emerging native fashion designers to display their work on the runway. Kyrie Dunkley is the owner and designer of Shining Star Style. Her work has been part of the fashion show every year since it started. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in designing clothes. What was some of the early invitations that you felt to start doing that?
I think as far back as when I was a child, I lived with my grandparents from 0 to 5. And what I remember most is cutting up mismatched socks and designing clothes for my Barbies.
Nice. And did you have a specific, like, what sock works best for Barbie? Is there a...
usually the ones that are, like, extra stretchy, like the more spandexy ones.
Yeah, so they can have, like, a tube dress?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then what happened next? Did you learn sewing skills at some point?
Well, Well, I was adopted into my mom's adopted family, and it was extended family of my real family. So we were culturally connected. We went to powwows a lot, and I remember seeing the women in my family sewing, even last minute, like in the hotels, by hand. So it's just something I watched, and then I picked up when I became pregnant with my son. That's when I was more determined to use my own skills.
Yeah, and then during the pandemic too, I think I remember that was a way to get your work out there a little more. Do I remember correctly?
Right. I used to work at the Multicultural Center for the Native Youth After School Program. And then during COVID, that's when I turned to sewing. And I got some donations from some supportive community members where they donated some formal attire for me to use. And that's where I came out with my first collection.
Yeah. So when you're shopping for clothes versus seeing clothes that you and your relatives are making for yourself, was there a connecting point or a disconnect where you realized, like, everyday wear to school and to work could also be designed by you and your relatives and people in your community?
Well, I've seen it from other designers on social media where they were creating ready-to-wear and doing drop shipping methods and working with like Shopify or Square. And I entered into an Indigenous artist program where I got to learn, and I had mentors that were from Montana, North Dakota. These were other more established designers and artists, and they were offering up their feedback, and that was also during the pandemic. So it was 2020 and 2021. It was through the Black Hills Community Loan Fund.
There's going to be a party this weekend here across the street from where we're sitting at the Levitt. Tell us about the festival and how fashion connects with it.
It's been going on for 3 years now, so this is the third annual. Every year we've had the fashion show integrated into the festival. This year's festival, we decided to break it up into two showcases. Three designers will come out first, approximately 1:15 p.m., and then after the third designer, we'll have a musician come out for about 45 minutes or so. And then we'll have the next three designers come out. In the previous years, we had it just back to back. This kind of just gives models time to kind of relax and get situated for the next designer.
Yeah. All right. So are you showing a collection yourself, or are you just curating?
Yes, I will be showcasing again. I will be in the second showcase. And this will also be a ready-to-wear collection, my second one.
All right. Tell me about this collection, some of the things that have inspired it.
This one I'm still keeping the name Inevitable. That was my first collection. This one's the fall edition. Fall is actually my favorite part of the year. I just really enjoy the changing of the leaves, the colors, the crunching noise beneath my feet when I'm walking around. We moved from Sioux Falls to Flandreau, and my son really loves the color purple, so he's the one that kind of inspired the colors.
Nice. Tops, bottoms, dresses, sweaters, what can we expect?
Yes, you're going to be expecting sweaters, dresses, tops and bottoms. I tried to keep in mind school kind of like dress code-y. Just because I also work within the school, and I want to be able to wear some of my pieces.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you then connect with clients or people who want to wear your work.
I offer orders online through shiningstarstyle.com. You can find that on Shopify. And you can also contact me directly on my Instagram, Facebook, or TikTok. And I just coordinate from there. Also, right after the fashion shows, I do a shop the runway where I allow anybody that's interested in the pieces that the models that they saw were wearing, they can buy them after the show.
Yeah. Tell me who else is being showcased. Who are some of the other designers?
Well, we have an emerging designer that showcased this summer. Her name's Brianna Mayo. Her fashion name is The Beauty Nest. Oh. Next, we have Jamie Sansasi, and hers is titled J.S. Ware. And then we also have Harmony Starstrup coming back. She showcased last year. Star in the Sky Sewing is also the name that she goes by. And those will be the first three that come out. And then second showcase, we have Sage Pinpovi. Sage Mountain Flower is her designer name. And then myself, Shine and Star Style, Kyrie Dunkley. And then we have our final showcase, which would be Brazia Designs, Mary and Mike. And I'm just really excited that she's coming. She's actually traveling the farthest. And she's one of the first designers that I got to walk for as a model when I became an emerging designer at the Teton Trade Cloth first annual fashion showcase in Oklahoma City. So I'm just kind of really excited that she's coming. Yeah.
I can't imagine being a model. That gives me anxiety. I would be so nervous to walk in a design in front of people. What's that experience like, and how do you invite other people to come into the runway work with confidence?
Well, I would say that's kind of like always there, the butterflies, and it kind of becomes like a really good feeling, like that adrenaline rush. It takes courage to go out there, but afterwards it's like, I can do that again. I can definitely do that again.
Yeah, nice. What's your favorite thing to wear and what feels good on the runway?
I would say, for me, I like wearing like the flowy dresses, like the ones that I can twirl in. I guess I just like that feeling of I'm a princess, you know, getting your makeup and hair done.
Are there trends right now where you see either designers are showing up and responding to something in culture, or are there just things that are always popular that people want to buy and wear?
I would say within the ready-to-wear, I would say dresses are always popular just because as Indigenous people, we tend to go to a lot of cultural events where it's kind of like a society dress code, I guess, to wear dresses or skirts.
Yeah.
And then just being able to wear it in a work setting.
Yeah. Ribbon skirts, ribbon skirts, ribbon skirts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw some great pants too that I thought were just like really flowy and dress like, but yet they were pants. I thought those were really cool that you've designed.
Yes. I love the pants too. They're very comfortable on the days that you kind of just want to relax.
Tell us a little bit about what goes on backstage and what goes wrong backstage when people are, or is it calm, or is it pretty exciting and last minute changes?
Well, I would say that most of the fashion shows I think I've been to, it's kind of, it feels like it just happens over in seconds. Like it starts, ends, it comes by so fast. But the feedback that I got about last year was that the model said it was very calm, very peaceful presence, and things were, you know, they were able to take in the moment. And nice. That's the vibe I want to hang on to and keep here. But I would say that I guess it depends when you're walking on with more than one designer. So then,
right, that's better than frantic. To come, like you said, to be able to enjoy it. The model is a person walking down the runway, not a hanger for the clothes, right? So you want the model to have a good experience, you know, through the day too.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that we need to know? If we're going to the event, what people are looking for, things that are really important that you want the audience members to pick up on?
I would say I think there's only 150 chairs available by the Levitt that are provided by the Levitt. So if you're planning to sit down and enjoy the show for a while, it goes from the first showcase 1 o'clock, the second one 3:15. It will be over before 5 o'clock. So if you're planning to sit for a while, bring your own power chair.
That's Kyrie Dunkley. She is owner and designer of Shining Star Style. You can see her clothing and that of other Native designers this Saturday as part of the All My Relatives Festival. Stick around after the fashion show and you will hear Mato Wayuhi. My conversation with him is coming up after the break. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Mato Wayuhi is nationally known as the composer of the hit FX Hulu show Reservation Dogs. And the nation will hear his work again and see him in front of the camera on an upcoming FX Hulu project with Ethan Hawke. The Lowdown starts streaming at the end of September. Plus, he has a new song out now. Here in South Dakota, we know Wayuhi as one of our own who is making waves in the national music scene, the national film scene, and he is a rising star. He returned home this week as the headline performer at the Levitt at the Falls All My Relatives Festival this Saturday. But first, he stepped into SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. What's been going on since the last time we talked? What have you been focusing on in your art?
That was May of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Starting the new year, my biggest, I guess, manifestations for myself were to move away from scoring film and TV and composing,
yeah,
and move more into acting and kind of getting in different realms of filmmaking and also just focus on my own music. And so in Lakota, you know, Tungashila is like creator. I guess someone or something was listening because I got fired from a scoring gig.
Nice.
And I say like not doing scoring and composing specifically just for like more indigenous and native content because I love that. And that's what, you know, how I even got started in this. But I was noticing I was kind of, there was some redundancy in what I was bringing music to,
mm-hmm,
you know, primarily just traumatic stuff, you know, of doing boarding school subject matter or things that I've already brought music to kind of ad nauseum. And so I was like, I don't know if I'm really the right person to continue this. And like, you know, and so I wanted to venture out of that and into my own music. And then with acting, I just, I mean, I grew up doing theater in high school,
mm-hmm,
and I forget what it's called here. It used to be DAPA, the new name.
Spotlight.
Yeah, Spotlight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that always felt very good, and I love performing and everything. And so, yeah, I set that intention, and thankfully, yeah, with that, I got a, you know, a pretty big role in this new upcoming TV series called The Lowdown that'll be premiering September 23rd.
Well, so tell me about The Lowdown.
Yeah, so it is a new series from the creator of Reservation Dogs, Sterling Harjo, who's like my big old brother. And yeah, basically it's a kind of a neo-noir series about a journalist who finds out too much about a subject matter. And it stars Ethan Hawke, and there's some great people involved. There's Kyle MacLachlan from Twin Peaks, Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones, Killer Mike from Run the Jewels, rapper, Keith David. Like, there's just so many amazing people. So I got to meet all these people and work with them, which was insane. Really, really cool. And it was nice, too, because I kind of, like, got thrown into the deep end. Like, I feel like Tungashila, creator, the universe is like, oh, you said you want to act. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a 9-minute long scene with Ethan Hawke. You know, and so, yeah, it was really the...
Ethan Hawke is lucky to be in a 9-minute scene with Mato.
Thank
That's
you.
What I'm just saying.
Thank
and I'm
you.
A big Ethan Hawke fan.
I appreciate that.
But that's the exact kind of... I would put you two in a scene together.
Thank you. Yeah, and I'm excited for people to see it. I haven't seen anything. I'm a little hesitant. Just, I think, because there were some intense scenes. But, that's the show, and so that comes out.
What's it on?
It's going to be on FX and Hulu.
Okay.
Yeah, so similar to Reservation Dogs. The premiere, we'll be going to the premiere in New York City in a couple weeks.
Okay.
So they're going to have like the official thing. Yeah, so it's pretty nuts. And then my own music, I've been able to release some music and, play some shows and stuff like that. And, I think I miss scoring and composing, and I definitely still do it from time to time, but it was important for me to kind of, I just noticed I'm very, very reluctant of comfortability, and I think I was finding a lot of comfortability in scoring kind of the same content, the same subject matter. So.
Was that what was being brought to you, or is that what you were bringing? Like, were you noticing that in yourself, or were you noticing in that in what people were asking you to do?
I think a little bit of both. I think it was like, you know, it's funny. I have a friend, Lauren Waters. She's a great filmmaker. And we were at South by Southwest, that film festival.
Yeah.
And we both had stuff there. And we were just talking about random whatever. And it was me and her partner, Robert, and her. And we were all just talking. And she teased me. And she's like, yeah, I have this new thing coming out. And looking for a composer and da-da-da-da-da. I was like, oh, that sounds great. She's like, yeah, because not everything in Indian country can be composed by you. And I was like, that's very true. Because, yeah, I think there's a bit of a ubiquity with, like, my name within just doing native stuff. And so, yeah, I think I noticed it, it becoming a little, there's some sort of, like, maybe some complacency when I was literally able to, like, take, you know, scoring pieces and apply them to several different, like, films or TV shows I was making, and I'm like, okay, this is like, this feels a little,
pay attention to this,
it's feeling a little too like almost incestuous of like these, all of these things are too embedded, you know, and I'm not really getting a lot of creative like motivation to keep this going. And yeah, like I said earlier, it's just tough. It's like, even if you're not native, to like see that, like that imagery all the time, it's like, oh my gosh. And then I having to pull it out of myself and all that type of stuff. So
I've been feeling that this job too. I'm like, sat down with the producers. I'm like, let's do something fun.
Yeah.
Right? Because when you're in the news, you're always talking about pretty heavy topics. In this show, we, you know, we're unafraid to talk about heavy topics. And then every once in a while, we all get a little dizzy and say, if we're feeling overwhelmed by the weight of the conversations, then listeners are feeling overwhelmed by the weight of the conversations. Let's go look for something. Step out of, you know, our current focus and see what we haven't been seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, there's something radical about that too, you know, of like, I'm going to, you know, really hone in on like the fun and the humanity and the creativity and like that excitement, that energy level, you know, because like it's very vital in all times, but obviously right now in terms of like how things are going in the world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And joy can be, and I notice that when I do follow you on Instagram, that, you know, the joy that you bring sometimes is, you know, that's an act of rebellion too, yeah?
Yeah, thank you for noticing that. I really appreciate that. That's so intentional too. I'm like super, I think I come off across as like goofball, you know, just tons of like clownish energy, like not caring, but everything is very intentional in terms of just me, my presence online. I don't want to brag, but I won Best Instagrammer at Lincoln High School. So, you know, it's a major, major, major motion for me. But,
the awards are racking up.
Right, exactly. I can't rest on my laurels now, though. But, yeah, that is something I'm really, because not, like, we just don't see that a lot, right?
Yeah.
Of, like, people having fun with their culture and their identity and their community. And that's something I'm really, really, like, stoked on with my vocation and my career, is that I can, like, bring that joy. Yeah. Or at least let people, like, let their guard down a little bit, feel more comfortable being themselves and dancing and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, the new song, the new video, Sunroof Song, just the love that comes through that. And just, you just, at the end, I start crying after I watch the video.
Aww.
I was like, I was all in it, and then I get to the end, and I was like, oh, this just makes me feel all the things.
That one was so, so cherishable.
Yeah.
Like that whole creation, that song, and
you cut a sunroof in an
old 86 Jaguar.
86 Jaguar.
Yeah, old 86 Jaguar.
You gotta get that shot right the first time.
XJ6. Yeah, that was, can I talk about it a little bit? Okay.
Uh-huh.
So basically I wrote the song and I was like, okay, cool. And then I just was thinking about the visuals and I was like, well, I want it to, tonally, there's a very specific vibe in that song, which is, to me, it's as just like listening to it, is like there's such an earnestness and also like a kind of an urgency.
Yeah.
And then also just like a beauty and an acceptance. Like, I think what I've had to go through to write a song like that, you know, I'm trying to start a foundation, so that might just mean friendship. Oh, my God. Like, oh, my God. It's crazy. Like, not being possessive or not being, like, woe is me. Just be like, let's just be friends.
And that's the foundation.
Right. Yeah. And it's so nuts to get to that place. And so, anyway, yeah, I think, and then so for the visuals, I was like, well, what would be, like, striking to me? Or, like, what would I like to see? And I was like, well, I love New Mexico. And a lot of the music was informed by living there and just being there pretty constantly. And then, yeah, I was like, well, let's just cut. I want to, like, cut a hole. Like, that. I think that's interesting because, like, the metaphor and all of that and stuff like that. And so, yeah, and then it's really easy to buy a car off of Facebook Marketplace in any sort of condition. And so, and I love old Jaguars, too. Yeah. So I was like, and then, honestly, like, when I get caffeine in me, like, mountains can be moved. I've become like Werner Herzog. Like, I literally, like, let's get that ship over that mountain. And so, yeah, I'm like, I start calling everyone I know and like, okay, let's do it. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And it was really great because it came together beautifully. Like, I bought the car from a guy named Eric, and he lives in what you see in the video. That's like his property.
Okay. Yeah.
And I asked him, can we shoot there? He's like, yes, of course. Da 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 da. Really cool guy. And yeah, I had an excellent team. And like, yeah, my friend Shandine Tome shot it, and she's just a wizard. Shot it in anamorphic lens, so it just looks so
it's
cinematic.
Beautiful.
And yeah, it was a really, like, just a beautiful time. Like, it was really cool. And it was also really fun to direct again and act in it. And like, it was the first time I've like fully and like completely captured the emotional resonance of a song with the visual resonance of a video. Like, they're so inner, like, one does not exist without the other, you know?
Yeah.
They're really, really, it's just, it was a, such a fun experience. And it was great, because, like, you know, it was my new chapter. It's like, I really, really, it was important for me to open that new place, because the music, to me at least, you know, it's a different direction, and playing it live is, like, so fun. People, it's like, oh. Anyway, yeah, so that song was really, really fun to do, and the video was great.
Do you have a sense, I think that you do, of just how much, you know, when you're willing to share your art and to go to that next place, how much other artists and non-artists are watching and relying on you to connect them with their heart. Like I said, I watched that, and then when I was done, I was just crying.
Mm.
And I was like, well, it's how long, you know, 4 minutes? Or like, it's 4 minutes of my life that just brought up all these things, and that is what you have done for me. And I just get to talk to you. But most people don't get to talk to you on a daily basis and ask you questions. But like, when you're putting something out in the world, do you have that sense that, like, you know, someone's going to watch this and then they're going to, like, it's going to mean something to them?
I think I am cognizant of, like, making sure that recognizing my most vulnerable parts of myself and what I am, like, healing from and working through, and how vital that can be for other people to sort through what they're going through, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think, like, yeah, it's really, I don't know, it's really, there's such a, like, necessity for people to do that. And for me to be like, okay, I'm really, like, insecure about this, or, like, this is a very vulnerable thing for me. And when I do that, I think, yeah, it's just, there's no magic trick. It's just mostly just people connecting to that and being like, okay, I can feel that too. I can understand that too. And yeah, I mean, like, in the video, it's, you know, me and this person, and like, it's I like the, like, little liminal spaces. That's kind of what that is, that liminality, that part of, like, post argument and, like, remembering.
So well.
Yeah, thank you. Like, remembering getting through something, and like, when you start warming up to someone again, and then it's like, okay, like, can we be cool? And then moving through the heartbreak and whatever, it's like, that's what you remember about a moment, is like those hard times you got through with someone. And then it's like asking the question, like, well, can that still be, you know, can you restore that? Can that be, like, valued still, even when things go their separate way and stuff? And like, yeah, it was a really, like, and I love that. And every project, every album, everything I make, I've learned that, like, I'm answering a question usually.
Yeah.
There's always a question that I'm answering through the album or the music, the process. And so if you look at all my albums, it's always kind of like, yeah. This, and you know, the last one, Staying Face Standing Soldier, was like, how did I get over losing my dad?
Yeah.
And so it was like all these different ways and avenues and stuff.
That album just is such an achievement.
Thank you.
Like, oh, nobody can ever take that away from you, what you did there in that album.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I've like said multiple times, like, if I die, I guess when, because if I do end up dying someday, but like, I'm like, I can, like, my spirit feels so, like, calm and confident because I was able to make that album.
That's was like Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska, right? That's what he says about Nebraska.
Like, really?
If we go back at all the stuff, 80 some years old, great career, I've done all these things. You want to understand me? Go back and listen to Nebraska.
Yeah.
Getting on the screen for the television series and how is that process? Because that's, you know, now you're back in that sort of theater kid space only with some other theater kids who have done a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you're in that room. It's a different kind of collaboration. Is it the same thing in a lot of ways that it's just a collaboration? You're making music with your friends, only you're making this script? Or, you know, in what way, what new things did you have to tap into to figure out, like, okay, I'm in front of the camera again doing this other thing. Mm-hmm. What do I have to bring to it now that I maybe had to learn about new?
What I like about acting, and honestly what drew me to even it conceptually again, was the presence that it demands. Mm. You have to be so in the room. That is like, those are the best performances. When you, because if you're, I forget what it's called, but there's like a form of, there's like a criticism of acting or a note. It's like you're in your head. You're in your head right now. Like you're not acting, you're in your head. And it's very clear. And it's so interesting because it's all in the minutiae as well of like, what is a good performance? What's like, that's such a lofty, there's no really set definition, but you can tell when someone is in their head and when they're just feeling it, you know? And it's so interesting. I love it. It's like the ebb and flow of having so much preparation, so much control, sure, so much rehearsal, recitation, and then once they say action, letting it all go, which I think is really cool. Yeah. And music, it's not always like that, right? Like every time I perform, I do find things within my songs that I can do something new or I can interact a little differently and stuff. Finding improv and like being present, but acting, it's like a whole different thing. And what I like about it too is like, I don't know, there's something very Buddhist about the whole thing. It's like impermanence, nothing lasts. You can't have, there's nothing sacred in acting too. There can like, there's preparation, but like you might come with this whole idea, I'm gonna do this thing, I'm gonna say this, this is my Oscar moment, I'm gonna cry. And then you might do it once and the director's like, I don't like that, say it faster, don't cry, laugh, also take 5 steps this way, go that way. We're going to put you in a pink shirt instead of a red shirt. Also, when you talk to him, remember this, da-da-da-da-da, wear your hat like this and take 4 steps back and remember you're supposed to do 5 jumping jacks and not 6. Action. And it's like that would literally happen on set. Yeah. There was moments where we were doing these long takes and like, yeah, I would get notes from the director. I would get notes from Sterling. I would get a suggestion from Ethan. And I would get, all the while someone is like rubbing like my chest trying to get the mic right and like prodding at my back and stuff. So I'm just like, okay, okay, ready, action. And so it is like full, like you are so, you, it's amazing. It's like really, really, it's almost like a tightrope walking or whatever. Yeah. It's like you have to be really like prepared and just with your senses and be really present and like understand stuff. So that's, it's in that way, I really like it. I like the pressure. I like high pressure performances and stuff, you know.
And you have to have the ability to do all those things. That's the one thing that the great actors, sometimes I just marvel, like, how do they move that muscle in their face? You know, like, I don't even know where that muscle is in my face. And here are people who have control over their physicality so much. So there's an athleticism to it. And then an emptying out, like you said.
Yeah.
And you're just the vessel for everybody else's input.
Yeah.
But that you can carry it out.
That's true. And what I love about it too, especially working with this crew, like it's a lot of turnover from Reservation Dogs. It's like the same folks and stuff. And like, that was really, really cool to see. It's very rare, I think, especially within like TV and film, where it's, you can see the progression of everyone within their respective fields.
Yeah.
So it's the same makeup people. It's the same hair people. It's the same, you know, gaffers and people holding the boom mic, and the same directors and writers, or no, actually not writers, he got a new crew for writers, but producers and stuff, and like seeing them all evolve and work on something that has more of like a weight to it, you know.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's an hour long show this time around.
Wow.
And yeah, and it's, you know, it's like a really, there's a lot of infrastructure that there wasn't for Res Dogs, and to see everyone kind of step up to the plate and work on it and like collaborate still, it was so cool. And to be in a different role was really exciting too. That said, a couple weeks ago, Sterling hit me up, and there's like a scene. I'm not spoiling anything, but it's a scene. It's an introduction to a character in the show. It's in the pilot. And he's like, hey, this is a very typical ResDoc experience. It'd be like, okay, we have this song. It costs $80 million to clear. And or, you know, we can't get in touch with the estate of whoever, whatever. So can you make something on the fly real quick that's like in the same world as it? So he sends me the scene. He's like, hey, we can't clear this song. Do you know any like native rappers or anyone who could like do something like this? Because I've looked, I can't find anyone. And I was like, girl. I was like, you have my number. And so he's like, yeah, if you want to try it, please. Yeah. And I was like, okay. So yeah, I made something. And he's like, yes, I love it. And so now, yeah, it's cool. Like, it's almost like a callback to my old. I'm like, oh, I can still like score the show a little bit. But the person scoring it, composing JD McPherson, is like a wizard. It's going to be great. I'm really excited to hear what he's doing. Yeah, it was just a nice little like moment of like, oh, I still bring that, you know?
Yeah. Do you have a sense of home right now? Because the last time we talked, you were kind of looking for like, well, where am I going to land? What am I going to do? Am I here? And now you have another big project. So I'm wondering how that's gone with you.
It's a great question. I think there's more, I think I'm more accepting of there being kind of this dizzying perspective of home. I recently moved to Phoenix, and so I pay water there. I don't know how much I'm really there. And so, yeah, it's like I moved there and I instantly left, really. And because I started doing the show, so I was in Tulsa every couple weeks, and then I would be on the road for other gigs and stuff like that. So yeah, I haven't really had a gauge of like that as much, but I'm also not stressed about it anymore. Right. And I've kind of accepted that. And I had a lot of like big moments and talking with my family about that, you know, and my oldest sister Iris gave me some really good game on like me. I was feeling insecure about like not having a home. Technically fit my own, you know, being a big boy and doing all these types of things. And she was like, well, you had that growing up. Like, you had a home growing up. A lot of people don't have that growing up. And so they seek that in adulthood. But the fact you had that growing up, you had that stability. And maybe that's not what you need right now. Maybe you can just be frolicking and kind of moving at a consistent rate and stuff. So I was like, okay. It made me feel a lot better. I was like, okay, I don't need to feel as hard on myself because, I think I had this kind of dichotomy of, well, I have my career and then I have my home life. And now I feel like more comfortable integrating those in a different way because they don't have to look a certain type of way. It doesn't have to look a certain type of way. So
it doesn't have to look a certain type of way.
Yeah. And I have a really weird life in a great way. It's just, it's come at the consequence of like having to have a different outlook on what home is. But you just kind of go where the love is too, I've learned. You just go where the love is and it's like everything sorts itself out.
Go where the love is and everything sorts itself out. Yeah. I love that.
It's my second time headlining at the Levitt Amphitheater in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Really cool. It was not, you know, there when I was growing up. So it's really cool to see it kind of be erected and, you know, doing its whole thing. And I'll be performing with a full band. And that's really fun. I did that in college, and it was, really great to, you know, hear my music recontextualized in that way.
Sure.
And also, not being musically trained, I'm really reliant on every musician I'm working with right now to, you know, help me and help the group and stuff. And I'm working with really talented cats who are all local. We have one Minnesotan, but she's really cool, so we let her slide. No, she's great. Her name's Marlena. She's a saxophonist, so that's going to be really fun.
So you've been in rehearsals?
Yeah, we've been steadily
good?
Rehearsing. Yeah, it sounds really good. It's really exciting, and like, it's cool because, you know, 6 years ago, I did an interview with you and released my first album, and I was interning at Wes Eisenhower's studio in town.
Yeah.
AKA, you know, member Soul Crate. And like, it was cool. It's just like, and now with time has passed, like we're rehearsing at Wes's studio and to play at this show and doing this interview again. It's just cool. I'm like, wow, this is like a really...
This guy gets so excited when you come in. Yeah,
yeah, it's a really like full circle moment.
That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening. Gives too much to rush or settles down for anyone less than what's unknown. You're open till you close, no matter where you go.